Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of the NBA page at NBC. And today we're going to talk Eastern Conference a little, fast starts, slow starts, and the Washington Wizards, who are off to a slower start than they'd hoped. And we're bringing in to do that Chase Hughes from NBC Sports Washington. How you doing, Chase?
Doing great, Kurt. Good to be back on with you.
It's great to have you here. The Wizards started off the first couple of games, you're like, hey, maybe there's something here, but they have stumbled of late. 4-6 record on the season, but it's not looked quite as good recently.
No, yeah, as you mentioned, they were 3-1 to open the year and were kind of taking advantage of a soft opening in their schedule. Yeah. You could see it coming in that the first five games were much more manageable than the second five games, where they saw the Celtics and then the Sixers back-to-back and the Grizzlies, and not surprisingly, they've had trouble with those teams. But they were taking advantage of it early on, and then that fifth game was like the final winnable game before the tough stretch happened, and it kind of proved to be a trap game. They lost to the Indiana Pacers at home, and they've just struggled to regain momentum, now losing five of their last six games.
That has come with their stars largely, although Bradley Beal is now missing a little time. He is back in health and safety protocols, but they've largely had pretty good health, especially from Porzingis and Beal to start the season.
Yeah, first on Beal, it's his second time in health and safety protocols already this season because he was in it in the preseason, but he was out within, I think, 48 hours. But it's funny, you and I were talking before we hit record about how young kids are just kind of germ traffickers. And he's got three very young boys. So I'm wondering if that's part of it, if that's why he keeps getting sick, just because I don't know if those kids are in daycare or not. But certainly, as you and I well know, that things get passed around. That's one concerning element of this start. It's not like you can blame it on injuries. I mean, they lost DeLon Wright in their fourth game in a win against the Pistons. And he's proven to be extremely valuable in absentia because he was probably their best defender and a guy that, you know, they could trust in multiple different defensive matchups. So losing him was a pretty big deal for sure. But, you know, even when Beal's out in health and safety protocols, you have Kyle Kuzma, you have Kristaps Porzingis, Will Barton, Monte Morris. You got plenty to compete night to night.
You should be able to. You look at the numbers and you watch them and the problem isn't like, oh, we just need to fix this or that. I mean, they're bottom 10 in the league right now in offense and defense. But I think you had mentioned, we talked a little before, like you said, the thing that seems to get the most attention right now is that they are just struggling from three, right? Like they are, as a team, shooting 28.4% from three. They're just not knocking it down. And they've got better shooters than that with Beal and Porzingis and Kuzma and on down the line.
Yeah. I mean, they made the fewest threes in the NBA last year. And then this year, they're at the same spot, 30th out of 30 teams. And, you know, going into last season, I thought they had addressed their three-point shooting problems, which were, you know, a problem the year before. I thought maybe they could be a league average three-point shooting team, and then they were dead last in the NBA. And then this offseason, they didn't address it in a major way, but it was kind of like, well, if some of these guys go back to shooting the way they have for the majority of their careers, and if Monte Morris and Will Barton and DeLon Wright and the new additions make an impact, well, Maybe they could be league average in three-point shooting. And here they are, once again, the worst three-point shooting team in the league. So I think the sample size is growing to the point where it's like, okay, maybe this is what they are. They just aren't a good three-point shooting team. And it's something that, you know, you can evaluate some of their moves in retrospect and wonder, you know, how they can pull themselves out of this. Because, you know, for instance, they drafted Johnny Davis 10th overall in the draft, and
yep,
he's not a three-point shooter. They have Corey Kispert, who they drafted, you know, the summer before, but the summer before that, they drafted Denny Avdia. He's not a shooter. It's not like they have these additions that they've made that are all of a sudden going to make a big difference over time. Now, I do think some of these guys could shoot better as the season transpires. You know, Rui Hachimura looked much better from three last year. Monte Morris could shoot better. Bradley Beal could shoot better, but it's a major problem. And I think all of us who follow the NBA could tell you it's not an ideal problem to have in this day and age, because it just shrinks your margin for error. And, you know, you go up against these teams that can just pop off for five threes quickly in a quarter, and the Wizards don't really have the personnel to do that. So sometimes holes can get dug really quickly within games.
Yeah, it seems to me, just looking at it, they look a little better when running, like when they do get out in transition, which isn't a ton. They're not one of the fastest teams in the league, but when they get out, they're pretty efficient, you know, on the break. But that lack of shooting just stalls out the half court.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There's been a little bit of a contrast there, because Wes Unseld Jr. kind of wanted to slow the pace down a little bit when he took over before last season and make them more efficient in the half court. But they have some players that are seemingly better suited for playing in the open court, like Denny Avdia and Kyle Kuzma. Yeah. I think those guys at 6'9", 6'10", their speed, their ability – with the ball in their hands, their passing ability on the run. Those things are kind of hidden when you're stuck to playing in the half court. And then, you know, when you're in transition, you can create open threes that most NBA players can knock down with regularity. You know, when you're trailing and all of a sudden yeah. you're on the wing and you get a shot in rhythm, you know, passed to you from the paint by a guard who's ahead of you. And that's exactly how you practice your threes when you're at the practice facility, right? It's usually a coach mm-hmm. rebounding under the rim and throwing you a pass at that spot, and you catch it in rhythm and knock it down. So the Wizards, I think, have had this sort of disconnect between wanting to slow things down and understanding that there are advantages to speeding things up.
Is that slowing it down just the nature of their roster? I mean, like guys who want to kind of run it, you know, like Chris Paul's teams are slow because he wants to break down the defense. Is it that, or is it a coaching thing?
I think it's a general coaching philosophy. I think there's probably some personnel elements to that. Monte Morris, you know, DeLon Wright when he's healthy. It's not like the speed element that they had with John Wall, certainly, and Russell Westbrook. You know, naturally, the offense is going to slow down when you have that type of change at point guard. But even last year, you know, toward the end, when they had Ish Smith, they were able to speed things up, and they've had, you know, guys like Ish Smith on their bench in years past. They don't really have someone who can push the pace in that sense. So it might be a mix of both. I think it is partly Wes Unseld Jr.'s philosophy and also the personnel that they have.
The transition defense hasn't been terribly strong either, but they don't let teams run on them too much, right? Like the whole game has slowed down.
Yeah, they sell out quite a bit on getting back on defense to the point where they're not a very good offensive rebounding team, because they just kind of forego offensive rebounding sometimes. Four guys will just run back on defense. So they're very keen on limiting fast break points. So that is definitely part of Wes Unseld Jr.'s strategy, no question.
How is Porzingis holding up as a rim protector? I mean, I've always thought when healthy, he's kind of an underrated player, and part of that is just that unicorn defense that he can kind of provide.
Yeah, he's been good. I mean, overall, that's been one strength for the Wizards this season, is limiting points in the paint and limiting just field goal attempts even within 5 feet of the rim, and the shooting percentage that their opponents are making in that range. And he's been part of that for sure. The Wizards – You know, they're right now they're tied for fourth in opponent points in the paint, when last year they were 21st. So they've definitely improved in that area. Now, I asked Wes Unseld Jr. the other day about that, because they were actually number one at the time. And then, you know, the Brooklyn Nets had some success getting into the paint against them.
Yeah.
And he said that it's a little bit of a small sample size and a product of the teams that they've played so far. They've played teams like Boston and Indiana that get up a lot of threes. And they also played the Sixers without Joel Embiid. So they were going with small lineups and taking a lot of threes. So we'll see how it plays out over time. But they definitely like the defensive impact that Kristaps Porzingis provides. Wes Unseld Jr. has raved about how he can defend pick and rolls and how he alters a lot of shots. So his blocks may not reflect, you know, the fact that he's having one of the best defensive years of his career, but they're pleased with what they've seen with his impact overall on that end of the floor. It's just that there's a lot of other missing pieces in their defense, which has resulted in them, as you mentioned earlier, being one of the worst defenses in the league so far.
By the way, when we're talking about the Brooklyn Nets game, how are Gafford's ankles? I got to say, like, how much is he clearly slips a little bit on a wet spot. Now, doesn't help. Look, Kevin Durant's Kevin Durant, and it was making him look bad. But how much is he out there complaining, like, man, I stepped on a wet spot. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I think his ankles might have been spared. It was more his groin. He kind of did the splits. Yeah. He played last night against the Grizzlies, so there was no injury, but probably an injury to his ego, I would imagine. He hasn't really discussed it publicly. He did have an Instagram post making light of it. That was a tough one. That was a crossover that might go on the end of year highlight of the whole season. Like, might have been the best crossover the entire season. It was incredible, the crowd reaction and how long it lasted in Capital One Arena. Obviously, Durant's an opposing player, but he's also a very popular player in most arenas around the league. Even though he has his haters, he remains very popular. And of course, he's from the D.C. area, so people like him in D.C. But it was just like a shocked reaction from the crowd that must have lasted upwards of 10 seconds. I mean, I've been to a lot of NBA games, and it was a very unique crowd reaction. Daniel Gafford, it's gonna be tough to live that one down. Like, that might go on Kevin Durant's career highlight reel, and that's saying something.
Yeah, exactly. And it's certainly on the end of your stuff. It's kind of that double crossover and just gets him.
Right.
And he was lost a little bit before the leg went out, and that just made it. Just took him to the ground and made it look bad.
Right. And also, there was rumors that there was a wet spot on the court, and I don't know if that's absolutely true, but, you know, they do play hockey games in the same arena, so that does happen.
Yeah, all the dual-purpose, aside the fact that the guys are just sweating out there, all the dual-purpose arenas have those spots and those moments where you're like, oh, that was not good.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Is there some? I mean, again, they're 4-6. They're not, you know, they're not languishing at the Orlando Detroit level of the Eastern Conference. But is there a sense of what, like, is there something that they think they need to do to turn this thing around quickly? Aside getting Beal back, obviously.
Yeah, I think defend better and create more opportunities from three. I mean, at least you can maximize the personnel that you do have if you can move the ball and get penetration in the lane and try to create some open threes on the perimeter. There haven't been enough of those. So those, I think, would be the things that they need to try to work on in the short term. But, you know, at 4-6, it's not far off from what I think most people expected them to be going into this season. I think they'll make the playoffs or at least the postseason and have about a 500 record. So you're two games under 500. It's within the margin for error. And I think what we've seen so far from them is a reminder that sometimes the least stable teams in the NBA are the ones that have records around 500, right? Like if you're a winning team, then they win a lot and you expect them to win, and that's just how it goes. And if it's a losing team, then it's the opposite, right? They lose every night and that's right. How it goes. But with the three-point shot creating such variance from night to night in the NBA, if you're a 500 team, oftentimes the highs are really high and the lows are really low. So, you know, you can beat the Sixers and Philly, and then you can turn right around and have your worst loss in franchise history to the Brooklyn Nets. So it might just be the roller coaster ride that they've strapped themselves into for the rest of the way, where, you know, maybe they end up around 41-41, but it is an adventure just to get there.
Also with the Nets, the other controversy that swirls, or one of the multiple controversies that swirls around that team early in the season with Kyrie Irving, who did not play, right? Did not play, still suspended against during the loss or during when they beat the Wizards. I know Denny Avdija was asked about that. The only Israeli born player in the league right now. I believe, I don't think anybody else is in.
That's correct.
Yeah, TJ Leaf is out. So, yeah, I think it's just him. Did he have much of a reaction? I mean, I saw the quotes, but it sounded like he did not want to be in the middle of that.
Yeah, it was a pretty measured reaction. I think he said all the right things. I think he did a good job of explaining why comments and messaging like that matters. And I think it was interesting because this isn't the first time that he's had to speak on a subject like that. Of course, there was the Myers Leonard incident.
Yes.
Where he used a racial slur on I think it was a gaming live stream. And that was even more inflammatory and more incendiary, even though it wasn't as big of a deal, of course, because Kyrie doubled down and because he's a bigger star than Myers Leonard was. But, you know, that was, I think, Denny Avdija's rookie year. So,
yeah,
I remember being impressed with his response then. And so I think he's kind of been down that road before. And I guess if this happens again, hopefully these types of things don't continue throughout his career. But it seems like, you know, he kind of knows what to say. He's pretty good with the media. He's a smart guy. So, yeah, it wasn't like he, you know, went to any great lengths to, you know, fire back at Kyrie Irving. I think he just had a very reasonable response about how, you know, that has no place in the game and no place in society. And we need to call it out because it's destructive behavior and it can have ramifications that, you know, may not seem possible in the moment.
Yeah. Avdija is one of the guys who's really not struggled this season a little bit. It really just hasn't found his role. Third year, you might be hoping he had taken a step forward. I'm sure he was hoping to for contract reasons, but he kind of really hasn't.
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising, I would say, because he had, by all accounts, a big summer. You know, he went into the offseason. It was his first full offseason in the NBA. He also went into it healthy, which was different from his first offseason after his rookie year because he had broken his ankle in April of that season and then had a bunch of setbacks throughout the summer. So he was healthy going into the offseason. He played for his national team and was the star of Team Israel, had a go-ahead shot to beat Finland, seemed to gain a lot of confidence from that. But we also found out in hindsight that he was dealing with a pretty significant groin injury where, as he described it, he had to take a bunch of pills just to keep playing. And by the end of the Eurobasket, could barely walk. I mean, that's how he described it. So that set him back going into the preseason. But, you know, he was ready for the regular season and started on opening night and seemed to play pretty decent considering he didn't play in any preseason games. But that faded very quickly. He lost the starting role. And then he was back in the starting role on Sunday night, but just has not been shooting very well. I think struggled early on with not getting any shots because he was in the starting lineup, and it was like he was the de facto defensive specialist with Monte Morris, Bradley Beal, Kyle Kuzma, and Kristaps Porzingis. But he bought into that role. It's just that, you know, he had trouble, of course, naturally guarding guys like James Harden and Jason Tatum. He had some, and Donovan Mitchell, some really tough defensive assignments. So he just hasn't been able to find any consistency yet. But it's early, and, you know, I was so impressed with last year, his second season in the NBA, how he took a leap forward despite having an unusual offseason the summer before when he was hurt and, you know, didn't play in summer league or anything like that. He still took a step forward, not only on offense, but particularly on defense. So I think over time, the more that groin injury is further behind him, we could see the same effect. But certainly so far, he's had a rough start to the year, no question.
You've got to see the Nets in person, something I haven't quite yet, but hope to I will next weekend when they're out here in Southern California. I know you're covering the Wizards. What was the vibe, though, around it? Was it, I mean, that felt to me like they're like, we'd just like to talk about basketball or focus on basketball game, right? Like they would like to get past everything else somehow.
Yeah, so I went to the Nets shoot-around that morning because I was there to interview Markieff Morris. I wanted to catch up with him. He's a former Wizards player.
And right.
I wanted to get some notes for the broadcast. And so I was kind of there, and it was just a storm of just bad PR. I mean, the PR staff was doing a great job with all of it, but, you know, they were dealing with a lot of PR disasters, I should say.
Yeah.
So Sean Marks spoke. Kevin Durant spoke, and Sean Marks, you know, kind of reiterated the press release about Kyrie Irving a lot, but made it clear that, you know, Kyrie Irving's going to have to take some further steps to get back on this team, and kind of left the door open that he wouldn't play for the team anymore. You know, I don't know if he was just covering his bases, but that really stood out to me. And then, of course, Kevin Durant spoke and kind of expressed frustration with the whole situation, and then had to clarify his comments like 30 minutes later on Twitter. So that was all a mess. As far as the way they played that night, much better than I would have expected given all the stuff going on around the team. I mean, Kyrie Irving suspended, Ben Simmons wasn't playing, they fired their coach earlier in the week, yet they looked much better than the Wizards did. I mean, especially early in that game, and the Wizards hung around, but a lot of the shots that the Nets were making, the Wizards were just so slow to close out. And it just looked like the Nets were the much more aggressive team. And then Kevin Durant took over and that was it. But, you know, that it was a night that I would say their depth looked pretty impressive, the Brooklyn Nets. I know there's been some questions about that,
yeah.
But Yuta Watanabe's playing well.
I've liked
Royce O'Neal a lot. Nick Claxton, I think, was 9 of 10 in the lane. So they've definitely got some pieces. Talent really isn't the problem for them.
No, it really, even on paper, you used to. Watanabe has been really impressive. I've always been higher on Claxton than most, but I just think you have to be in kind of a specific situation with him, right? Like he is not if you've got him on the roster, you still need they're not going to get Brook Lopez, but a Robin Lopez, right? Or some other, just a big body. Like I've been out again. I'm out here in LA. Like everybody needs a Zubat. Right? Like everybody just needs somebody who can kind of body the other team's big guy. And Zubac is a little better than I think he gets credit for. He's a pretty good player. But like you just need that guy who can kind of score around the paint and be physical inside.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. The Wizards have had some issues with that. They had Robin Lopez a couple years ago, and he was perfect in that role. It's like we make so much about how the big man position has changed, but yes, it has changed, like in the starting lineup, but every team kind of needs a player like that. Like those guys aren't complete dinosaurs, like because when you don't have one of them and you go up against a Jokic or Embiid, then you definitely miss having them. And we'll see about the Wizards this year. They do have Taj Gibson in the third role, but you know, Porzingis and Gafford are both slighter builds. I mean, obviously Porzingis is 7'3", but I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they themselves are missing a Robin Lopez type.
The other guy I wanted to talk with you about was this year's first round draft pick, Johnny Davis, who has really struggled. I have to say, I saw him at Summer League and thought, wow, that guy is a long way away from where I think they thought they were taking him, 10th, if I'm remembering right.
That's right.
You know, what's the reaction there? He is down in the G League and seemed okay with it just because he was going to get some run.
Yeah, I mean, Wizards fans are, of course, worried about what they've seen so far because he struggled in the Summer League, and it was kind of attributed to some back tightness. But then he struggled in the preseason and has had some trouble in the brief moments he's played so far in the regular season. You know, even when Bradley Beal got hurt in one game and Corey Kispert was already out and DeLon Wright was out, you know, they've been kind of apprehensive to turn to Johnny Davis. And, you know, if you're the 10th overall pick, ideally the guy would be able to contribute something in the short term and then, of course, present plenty of upside in the long term. But even though he was a 2-year college player, and by all accounts, he was a smart college player and, you know, well-rounded player, he definitely has not proven to be a plug-and-play type of guy. Confidence might be an issue. You know, he's also been adjusting to being a new father off the court. So that, you know, might have thrown his world upside down, as you and I can both relate.
Yeah.
He's also, I think that the main adjustment on the court, though, is just the speed and the size. I mean, he was in the Big Ten and, you know, he could get past people, but the NBA's athleticism is just on a completely different level. And I think especially maybe when you compare it to the Big Ten, where it's a slower style of play, particularly at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So he's had some trouble, I think, just keeping up with other people athletically. I will say, you know, the shooting numbers have been dreadful every step of the way, except for last night in the G League. He shot pretty well. I think he was six for seven from the field, and he also went 3 for 3 from 3-point range. But every other game he's played, you know, it's like 2 for 12 or like 1 for 8. Like, it's really bad shooting numbers. But I will say, defensively, I think he's further along. And I do try to remind Wizards fans that was a big reason why he was drafted. He was a guy that, you know, was rated as one of the best perimeter defenders in the draft. And even though he was a 20-point scorer in college, I think he might be further along defensively. And it seems like head coach Wes Unseld Jr. agrees, because he said recently he's ahead of the curve as an on-ball defender. And that's where you can kind of see the 10th overall pick athleticism come through, when he's trailing defenders on the perimeter and fighting through and around screens. He is a quick player. He's strong. He's not maybe the fastest guy up and down the court. He's not going to play above the rim, but there are some athletic traits that I think at least lend themselves to the defensive end. But so far, certainly, I think the early returns and the base level testing is just that it's going to take him some time before he can be trusted in the rotation.
Yeah, and like you said, I don't think – they may not have been banking on him for big minutes this year, but if you're drafting a guy 10th, you expect him in the rotation. You expect something more than the G League out of him.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, especially when a guy played 2 years in college and just the style of play and the type of athlete, it's not like some lottery ticket who, you know, barely played in college last year, but has a 48-inch vertical and has got a long wingspan. Like, this guy doesn't have those traits, so you would hope that he could figure it out pretty early on, because the athletic upside is not the type that screams long-term project, if that makes sense.
Yeah. This Wizards losing streak now, and for people who don't know, 5 of 6, like you said, it started against the Pacers, but after that, it's been Celtics, 76ers, the Nets, like we said, who have talent, the Grizzlies, who are, you know, second best record in the NBA last year, and roll the most entertaining player in the league out every night in Ja Morant.
Yeah.
that was obviously in Memphis, but you can't take your eyes off him. It softens up a little bit this week, right? They get the Monday night, we were speaking before the game, but they're in Charlotte, a team that's not off to a fast start. And then they're home for, is it 6 in a row, with some winnable games in there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Dallas, obviously, you got to deal with Luka.
Yeah.
Then they play the Jazz, who are much better than I think most of us expected. And then you see the Grizzlies again. And, you know, the Thunder, that's a winnable game. I know Miami is off to a similar start to the Wizards, but they're still really talented. They actually play the Miami Heat three times in four games, which I don't know if I've ever seen that.
There's more of that this season where there's some teams that are just really, they're getting them a lot. You've got the baseball series both in Miami. Right around Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah. It's the day before and the day after Thanksgiving. So if, you know, with the way the Heat are playing right now, if that continues through the rest of the month, maybe it'd be a good time to see them three times in four games. But
yeah,
certainly anytime you go to Miami, it's tough to win. And the Wizards have had some trouble with the Heat over the years, as most teams have. This part of the schedule that they just went through, which was Celtics, Sixers twice, Nets, and Grizzlies. You know, even though Embiid didn't play, Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons didn't play, coming into the year, that looked like it was going to be one of the most difficult parts of the entire schedule. Now, you could kind of pull the microscope over some of those games and say, well, you know, Joel Embiid didn't play. You should have won both of them. They only took one game against the Sixers. And maybe they should have taken advantage of the Nets, given the state that they were in. But I think what we've seen so far and moving forward is just a reminder the Eastern Conference is pretty tough now. Like I said going into this year that I thought the Wizards had the talent to be in the range of as good of the best teams they had with John Wall and Bradley Beal, but be potentially a 9 or 10 seed because the East is so much better. Like those teams that Bradley Beal and John Wall were on were pretty good, but they also took advantage of a weak Eastern Conference. You know, they would get the fifth seed with like 45 wins. Last year it took a winning record just to make the play-in tournament. When 2 years before that, before the play-in tournament was as constituted, the Wizards actually had the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference, and they were 20 games under 500. It was the bubble year. So it's a very different landscape now. And, you know, the East was really good last year. And then, you know, a team like the Cavaliers, who I think were the 8th seed, added Donovan Mitchell and had a bunch of young players who are only going to get better, and we've seen them improve this year. So the Wizards are going to have a tough road just playing a lot of Eastern Conference teams, and we've already seen that the effects of that so far.
Yeah, and I was one of the things I just wanted to talk with you about was the challenge. You've seen of some of these teams now up close. It's just a deep season in the East where you're going to get somebody pretty good every night. You know, Atlanta's improved. Boston's obviously there. I don't think Miami's going to be this slow. I think that they will find they're Miami. They don't quit. They'll find their spot over the course of the season. But who has leapt out at you? Who have you seen? I mean, you've seen Cleveland. You've seen Chicago, like Boston. Who's jumped out at you?
Well, Cleveland certainly jumped out. I mean, they have had pretty much a best-case scenario so far where the young players look good. I mean, I know Garland has had some injuries, but Donovan Mitchell looks, like a great fit. And like he was the missing piece to turn them into contenders. I mean, 8-1, that's a really good record. I think they look like, barring health, like they're going to go on a deep playoff run this year. And I thought the Bucks would be the best team in the conference going in, and that's the way things have gone. You know, with Chris Middleton hurt in the playoffs last year, obviously they couldn't go on the run that they would normally be capable of, but they still have Giannis, who in my opinion is the best player in the league, and yeah, Drew Holiday and Middleton are really good second and third players on a team. The Hawks look good. I think the only surprises I would say are the fact that the Heat have started slow and the Sixers have started slow. The Brooklyn Nets, I wouldn't be surprised if they're kind of hovering around the play-in tournament by the end of the year, just because as talented as they are, you know, you can't rely on Kyrie Irving. We knew that going in this year.
No, yeah.
And Ben Simmons, it doesn't look like he's the player that he once was. I don't really know what's going on there. But, the top of the Eastern Conference, if you asked me going in, I would have said Bucks number one, and I think Cavs and Celtics 2 and 3 in whatever order that would be. So I think those are the top three teams, but we'll see if anyone else can enter that mix. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the Heat were right up there by the end of the year, as they always are.
Yeah,
I know the Raptors just lost Siakam, but I really like the talent that they have. And the Hawks, I mean, I think people have overlooked them. DeJounte Murray seems to be a really good fit next to Trae Young.
Yeah. By the way, just to start some improbable rumors, I mean, obviously, it's the how long does Kevin Durant put up with this buzz is around the league. Like, he hasn't asked for a trade. They are not looking to trade him. Please don't go there. But if for people listening, but I would also say they're on the watch list of every team around the league is, you know, guys who might, everybody's looking at that situation going, he asked out over the summer. This doesn't look good. It's easy to say the Wizards would like to be involved, but on a serious level, would the Wizards want to try to bring him home?
I'm sure, yeah. I don't know whether they could meet the asking price of what things were rumored to be over the summer, but, you know, first starting with the Brooklyn Nets, I know it was an unusual situation where a superstar player didn't get his way over the summer, but say whatever you want about Kevin Durant, ultimately, he's an all-time great, and he's in a situation that's kind of not the fault of his own. Like, by the way,
he's balling out. Like, he is
and he's
phenomenal
playing
this season.
And he's 34. Like, you know, he decided to join up with Kyrie Irving, but he couldn't have foreseen this. And then they fire the head coach, and Ben Simmons isn't, you know, playing. He hasn't been able to stay healthy or play well. I wonder at what point does Sean Marks look at the situation and be like, all right, like we can't just like force this guy to stay. Like, he is an all-time great. He's still got some left in his prime. He's 34. Like, we need to do right by him and do right by the game of basketball and get him to greener pastures, because you can't trap Kevin Durant in that. And you got to be careful with some of the words you use, like trapping a guy, you know, in New York City, making $40 million a year playing a sport that he loves to play. It's not a trap, but at some point, you know, you kind of need to do right by a legend, or else it could come back to bite you later on. Like, other players, other stars might hold it against you. I could see that happening. So I wonder if they're going to have to just give in and end up trading him now. If they want to hold to the same asking price they had over the summer, where it was like, okay, you know, Devin Booker's not enough. You know, if the Suns want him, then it'd be tough for the Wizards to compete with that. But certainly they would be interested. I think every step of the way where he's been available, you know, the Wizards have been interested. Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, it's a hard asking price to meet, because you don't want to give up Beal and probably not Porzingis. And I don't know what Brooklyn would want back. They don't have their own picks, so do they just want guys who can start to...
Well, you could give them a lot of expiring contracts. Kuzma. Porzingis could technically opt out, but it'd be fun. I think it'd be really fun to watch Durant and Porzingis play together because of just how unique of players they are. But Barton's an expiring deal. Rui Hachimura's an expiring... You could probably help them create a bunch of cap room if you wanted to.
Yeah, if that's what they're looking to do, Sean Marks has already dug that team out of an ugly. I mean, he took over the worst job in basketball after King was let go, and they had no draft picks and no good players, and he built up a culture that has felt that culture from the Nets 4 years ago when they were just working hard, scrappy young players just seems forever ago now. That doesn't feel like this team at all.
But you know what's funny about that is, like, anyone who wants to blame Sean Marks and the Nets for doing what they did by bringing in Durant and Kyrie Irving is operating with hindsight, because, like, obviously you would do that. It blew up in their faces. It's probably the biggest disappointment of a super team, maybe in sports history, but you would do the same thing that they did.
Yeah, no, it's certainly up there in the NBA super team failures with, like, the 2004 Lakers and a few others, where it was just you thought on paper this team couldn't not win. And I mean, remember going into last season, we all are like, Harden and Irving and Durant, this who's going to beat these guys? And it turs out themselves. So
right.
And yeah, Boston, is it just you feel like I do that? They just haven't found their groove yet, and maybe, you know, obviously they've had the coaching change in that situation, but it's also teams that reach the finals start slow the next year. They just it's hard to get motivated, right? It's just hard. It's hard for teams, I think, to come in with the same. We're seeing it with the Warriors. Sometimes it's just hard to come in with the same energy, and they've got other issues with how their young players have stepped up in Golden State. But, like, I'm not really worried about Boston. They're also without. They're a much better team with Robert Williams in the paint. Like, just that.
Oh yeah, he's all defense, and they're going to be fine at least on the court. I mean, we'll see about coaching over time how that affects them, because obviously it was an unfortunate situation. But I mean, they've got Jason Tatum, who's arguably a top five player in the sport, and he's young enough where he can continue to get better. Last year, the strides he made on defense and as a passer were really impressive to me. And Jaylen Brown's become overshadowed, but he's a really good player. I mean, his efficiency, his defense, the total package, he's not consistent enough to be, you know, in the conversation among the best players in the league, but he's young enough where he's got time to still get there. And I really like Malcolm Brogdon, the fit next to Marcus Smart. And I've just always liked him as a player. And, you know, they needed someone who can generate offense from that position. So they've got a really good roster. And, you know, you mentioned they haven't hit their stride. They're still third in the East. So things are just fine for them.
And back to the Wizards and looking ahead, you kind of mentioned it before. This is a team that, look, they're just in the middle of that pack, right? Like, Toronto's 6-4, but they just lost Siakam for what's, they're saying 2 weeks, but it's a groin strain. Those tend to take longer. They're reevaluating in 2 weeks, but my guess is more like a month or longer, and that hurts them. He was playing at a very high level. But then you've got the Bulls, the Knicks, the Pacers, the Wizards. They're all kind of, and they're all kind of in the mix. So even whatever you think of what's going to happen with Philadelphia and Miami and Brooklyn, and the Nets are probably in that same category as the Wizards right now. Like, it's a long season, and they're just kind of in the mix where they could, like, getting into the top six is not out of the question for them.
No, it isn't. I mean, health is going to be a big factor in that, although they've been mostly healthy so far. And their offense is just really underperformed. I think the Wizards need to get their offense going, because if you told me going into this year that Bradley Beal and Kristaps Porzingis would both be averaging career highs and effective field goal percentage, and they were healthy through the first 10 games for the most part, I would think that the Wizards would have a better record than they do. And, you know, with Beal and Porzingis and Kuzma, and if you consider some of the depth pieces they have, like Will Barton and Rui Hachimura, there's no reason why they should be a bottom five team in points per game. Now, efficiency might be a problem over the course of the year, but I think they're going to end up hitting an offensive stride where they put up a lot of points and they play high scoring games, you know, where it's like 135, 132. And, you know, whether they win comes down to whether they can get a couple stops at the end, or, you know, who makes the last three in a barrage of them. But so far they just haven't really shown much of anything on either end of the floor. So it's hard to evaluate. And I'm also, you know, kind of scarred by what happened last year, because they started out 10-3. I kind of came into this year being like, all right, I'm not going to make too much of what happens early. But so far it's like most of what happens doesn't look very good. So I'm waiting for them to kind of show us some signs of some positive trajectory on one end of the floor.
Exactly. I think if they just get, like you said, if they can get one end of the floor in there, you start to look like a playoff play-in team, right? Like, you just, right now, nothing's clicking.
No. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, I've been wrong before about this team. Sometimes they underperform, be it because of injuries or chemistry issues, but it just seems like they're going to be better over time as long as Beal and Porzingis are in the lineup.
By the way, I'm obligated by law to say they're not looking to trade Beal right now, right?
No. Okay. Well, they can't. Well,
that's true. They can't even trade him.
Yeah, they can't, at least for a little, another month or two, because he signed the extension. But for at least for now, there's no trade rumors, which is obviously a brief respite in a years long saga.
Right. But I imagine that. I imagine those rumors will, depending on what happens with the season, but I imagine that those rumors start to float to the surface again next summer like they always do.
I think the key phrase there is like they always do. I'm sure Brad would say the same thing, because it's obviously been going on probably since 2019, I would say. So
at least.
Which is crazy, because that's only like, what, 4 years? But it seems like they've been going on longer than that.
Yeah, it does seem like it comes up every time around. And he's stayed loyal. They've stayed loyal to him. He's got that bag now. I mean, if he really wants to think about it in a year or two, I wouldn't be shocked. But right now he's just, he hasn't been that guy. So, I mean, the guy who looks like, all right, where's the greener pasture? He's just not been that player.
Yeah, and he's making one of the biggest contracts in NBA history. And, you know, he's right now it's just been the three-point shooting that hasn't really come around. You know, I'm not too concerned that he's not scoring 30 points a game because he's scoring over 20. He's leading the team in scoring, and he's shooting well from two-point range. Like, his efficiency overall is pretty decent, and he's leading the team in assists, a career high in assists. And Wes Unseld Jr. has raved about his defense so far. So it's like he's all around like had a pretty decent start to the year. But the three-point shooting continues to be a conundrum for him because this guy, I don't know if, you know, fans who don't watch the Wizards closely remember, but the first like 5-6 years of his career, he was like Klay Thompson level from three-point range. And he just dropped off a cliff, and it's just continued to go downward, and he hasn't really recovered. And it's this kind of long explanation required that, you know, John Wall got hurt, and obviously he set up everyone around him for easy threes, and Brad had to become more of an on-ball playmaker. But we're still kind of holding out hope that that the threes will start falling, but they just haven't for the last several years.
By the way, what's the reaction been in Washington to John Wall getting back on the court and looking good?
He looks really good.
He does.
He looks incredible. I mean, I saw someone juxtapose, a play that he had last night where he was flying down the court and pulled the ball behind his back and laid it in. And they did it with a play of his when he was with the Wizards like 6 years ago. And it was the same exact speed and the same exact motion. And it's like, this guy ruptured his Achilles and had all these knee injuries, and he's back to being that fast, which was honestly one of the fastest players probably in NBA history.
Yeah.
He clocked him. I mean, that was like his game, right?
Yeah.
It's incredible. And it's interesting to evaluate, like, okay, well, what if the Wizards never traded him? It's easy to say now, because here we are 2 years later after they traded him, which was in the middle of a long injury recovery, that, okay, well, maybe him and Bradley Beal could do something. But, you know, you would have wasted a long time that, like, it was time that the Rockets could waste. And then the Clippers picked him up, you know, at a great time where, like, all that stuff was behind him. But I think Wizards fans sleep on how difficult the last few years would have been if the Wizards kept him and tried to continue playing with Bradley Beal with that amount of money just as dead weight on your salary cap.
No, it was time for both sides to kind of just move on. But it's been fun to see him back and see him enjoying it. And, he is a fun player. He's got a lot more craft to his game now, too. He's always had a little, but I mean, like you said, when he first started in the league, it was all speed. And over time, that's really developed into, he was an all-NBA point guard for you guys for out in Washington for years. And I don't know that he's back to that level, but he'd get Sixth Man of the Year votes right now. He's played better than Reggie Jackson for the Clippers, and Ty Lue's got some decisions to make on his end as well.
It's great to see him succeed after all he's been through, not only on the court, but off the court. And also it's great to see him buy into this role that, you know, I don't know if it ever would have happened in Washington because he was the franchise guy.
But yeah.
He's been through a lot. It's humbled him. And I think he's found the perfect situation for him and the perfect role for him to carve a new chapter in his career.
Yep. Well, Chase, thanks for doing this. Thanks for talking Wizards and East with us. We will do that again throughout the year, hopefully.
Absolutely, man. Let's do it again.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday, myself and Corey Robinson, with our weekly conversation about all things going on in the NBA. I don't know if the Wizards will come in that one. I'm guessing that the Nets will, but we'll get back to that and talk to you on Wednesday. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Price drop? Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus, get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.